Welcome to the Air Force Agency in Focus, sponsored by Leidos.
Hello, and welcome to today's program. I'm Eric White. The Air Force's top uniformed acquisition official wants industry to remember the basics when it comes to contracting. Lieutenant General Duke Richardson says with the field becoming more and more complicated, many in the contracting community tend to forget the keys to creating a successful arrangement. Speaking at the Air Force Materiel Command's Life Cycle Industry Days last month, Richardson lays out how he thinks things could be simpler.
I want to talk about the second principle that's on that LCMC roundel called unity of purpose, and what that means to me. You know, it's not unity of command. We all remember the day when there was this thing called unity of command, and we had one boss, right? Remember those days? We had one boss. It was really nice. It was like, hey, I don't work for you. You could say stuff like that and get away with it. Those days are gone. Those days are gone. Everyone's got more than one boss now. I had two bosses as a PEO. I had General McMurray because I was a director of one of his directorates. And I was also a PEO for Dr. Roper for a portfolio of programs. Two very different bosses in terms of what they were responsible for. And so, of course, my wife, you know, would be another boss. But so now we've gravitated towards this thing called unity of purpose. And so I just want to talk about unity of purpose. It's not a boilerplate phrase for me. And really what it means to me is everyone working toward a common goal. Okay, everyone working toward a common goal. And so when I said I'm in a funny mood because I'm feeling kind of fuzzy and soft. By the way, I'm a double E by trade, but this is going to be more of a soft kind of a talk today. And so everyone, that's pretty broad for me. And what do I mean by that? I mean, when I say everyone, I mean the government program offices. The government program offices. And then within the government program office, I also mean industry. I also mean industry. I think it's a misconception that industry and government don't have aligned interests. I think we actually do. They're very aligned. If we don't deliver, we both look bad. Period dot. No one cares about why or what the excuses are, or you know, Lockheed didn't do this. You can blame them all you want, but guess what? Government program office, you're responsible. Okay, or Lockheed or Boeing or Northrop or whoever. You can blame the government program office, but guess what? You're part of that team too. And so that's really big for me. And it's not just the big ones, it's also the suppliers, which there's a lot of suppliers in here. And this really came home to roost for me on this Air Force One, which I'm going to talk about a little bit. I'll give you some examples of why this is so important to me now. This was created, and General McMurray knows, in I think 2012, that unity of purpose thing. But it really never attached meaning to it up until the last 2 years. The headquarters Air Force is part of that everyone. The Congress is part of that everyone. DCMA is part of that everyone. TEST, General Brewer is going to talk a lot about TEST. TEST is part, the Air Force Test Center is part of that everyone. AFLTEC is part of that everyone. OSD is part of that everyone. Everyone is part of everyone. That's why it's called everyone. And so that's what I want to talk about is unity of purpose. And once we get it to a plan, once we have a plan that we're going to execute, and once everybody's had a chance to shape it, you know, once you've had your input into that plan, guess what? It's time to execute. And so you want to talk about celerity, which, by the way, is a word that I had to look up after Dr. Roper used it for the first time, which is, I believe it means swiftness of movement. It's really impossible to move swiftly if you're not all moving in the same direction. And so I'm not talking about a good, healthy debate. I'm not talking about that. Once the plan is built and a legal decision is made by a decision authority that has that ability to make that decision, it's time to move out. And so we got to stop continuing debating. And I think we're all guilty of that. Inside program offices on the government side were guilty. I think industry is guilty. I think the suppliers are guilty of that with the primes. I think the primes are guilty of that with the suppliers. And so if you think you're free from this, you're not. And so I'm going to ask you to reflect on that from this day forward. It says we need to all be part of that everyone. So let me give you some examples. This is not an exhaustive list. This is not an exhaustive list. I'm going to start with a big example. A very big example. And General Britton, this is going to come from your portfolio. So, because it's the one that I'm very recently most familiar with. So, VC-25B, which is the next Air Force One, is, you know, often in the news, a very large program. I don't, and I would challenge anybody to check me on this, I believe is the largest fixed price development sole source contract, I believe. And, you know, don't raise your hand now, but if I'm wrong, please tell me, because I've been saying that a lot. Nobody's corrected me yet. So the largest fixed price development sole source, which is an important part of this contract that I'm aware of. Okay, so that's a game changer. That sole source word is a game changer. You know what a contract is, right? A contract is a mutual agreement between two parties. You can't force somebody to sign a contract. And so fixed price development is a challenge all on its own. Fixed price development in a sole source environment magnifies it probably tenfold. And this is not a strike at Boeing. I love my Boeing teammates. It just is. It really doesn't matter who the prime is. And so on the 18th of February, John, hopefully I get that date right, of 2018, President Trump and Mr. Muhlenberg, the CEO of Boeing, they negotiated a price for the next Air Force One. The price to deliver two Air Force One, fully missionized, two Air Force One aircraft. And when I say fully missionized, I mean to the original requirements set that Air Mobility Command had written. So no cut in requirement, the what we call SRD, System Requirements Document 7.0, that requirement set, the full requirement set, 3.900, right, because you could maybe round something there, billion fixed price development contract. That's the agreement they made, and they negotiated that. And so what that meant was, you know, easy day for Duke and John Sly, right? And the program office, and Mr. Robinson. Mr. Robinson, easy day? No, not an easy day, because as you all know, that's when the real negotiations begin, and all the ground rules and assumptions, and all the parts that goes in that go into that. And so then we went on to about a five-month journey where we worked with Boeing to get the terms and conditions to a point where they were willing to sign that contract for that price. And so what it forced us to do, and this is my first example, I have actually six or seven, don't worry, they're not all going to be this long. What it forced us to do is really think about what it is that we care about as a government program office. What do we value? What are the things that we have to do that we are not willing to trade away? Because we had an industry partner that for them, that price and that requirement set meant doing the job a certain way. You know, probably limited amount of government involvement than more than a traditional, like a cost plus contract. For us, we knew that there was some amount that we were going to have to do. And so Mr. John Sly, John, raise your hand, Deputy PEO, now Ryan Britton, you're inheriting this. We came up with seven, what I'm going to call foundational government responsibilities that you have to do because these are taxpayer dollars. And we have to answer to taxpayers, and we have to do things properly.
Lieutenant General Duke Richardson is military deputy for the Office of the Assistant Secretary of the Air Force for Acquisition, Technology, and Logistics, speaking at a recent industry day for the Air Force Materiel Command. Richardson explains those seven principles in the next segment after a quick break. I'm Eric White.
Artificial intelligence is often portrayed as a magic wand that will solve everything. But in reality, unlocking the power of AI comes from looking beyond the hype and focusing on thoughtful and realistic problem solving. At Leidos, we're focused on helping our customers adopt AI and machine learning tools with solutions that solve real problems. With a deep understanding of our customers, we're creating reliable, resilient, and secure solutions that look beyond the hype. Learn more at Leidos.com/AI.
We're listening to Lieutenant General Duke Richardson speaking at the Air Force Materiel Command's Life Cycle Industry Days last month.
The real intent is to kind of make you think about what you value. So if you want to go fast, you can cut stuff, but you got to decide what is the part that you're not going to cut. What are those things that you're not willing to cut? And, you know, we worked a lot with Mr. Robinson, the Senator PK, we worked with Mr. Saad, we worked with Boeing. And so here's the seven that we did not work with Boeing on these seven. These seven were done strictly in-house. The first one is probably obvious, and that is we have to make sure we comply with all laws. Right? There's a lot of laws out there. Like the famous one that a lot of the industry folks in here won't like is the cost and software data report. You know, sorry, it's in the law. We don't really have an option. We're going to do that. So we have this thing called, if I use the term CDRL, contract data requirements list, it's basically all the deliverables, all the data deliverables that industry provides to the government. And so we, that formed that. We went through every single deliverable, every single data deliverable. There were 220 unique deliverables on this contract. 220. Yeah, that's a lot. I'm talking about unique deliverables. Some of those would spawn. One of those, like the integrated master schedule, was delivered monthly. That's just one deliverable, but that frequency is monthly, and so you can imagine it's a lot of things. And so we had to go look and say, hey, you know what? What do we really care about? What are those things that we're willing to live without? Number one, law compliance, got to have it. We're not going to flex on that, right? We're not interested in going to jail. We're going to make sure that we comply with the law. That's the first one. All right, so that was easy. The second one is what John and I call performance assurance, which is about we have got to be sure that we do enough oversight along the journey that we can assure ourselves that when we get to the end, that we actually are going to meet the specification that's required. Right? We can't just kind of wait to the end and pass it to General Brewer and see what happens. And so there's a certain amount of government involvement that we do. And so things like attending a critical design review, for example, would fall into that camp. And so that one there also trimmed back some of the CDRLs the data deliverables that we, and I'll tell you where we reduced it. I told you we started at 220, and I'll tell you where we reduced it to when I get to the end. And then the third one is spec verification. So when we put something on contract, General Holmes or General Miller are expecting it to meet the requirement that they set forward. And so we do that. And I know General Brewer is going to probably take me to task on this when he talks later about integrated DT and OT. But right now, the way our system works is we have this thing called a spec. And we literally go in there and we make sure that every spec is met and signed off before we close the contract out. Sometimes we can do that through inspection. Hey, it's supposed to have the doors. I got the door. Yep, there's the door. Check. Sometimes it's by analysis or analogy, or sometimes it's ground testing. Unfortunately, a lot of times it's flight test. And that's where, now we're getting a little bit more, now we got to generate a sortie. Maybe we have to get range time. Now it starts to get more complicated. And so that's the third one, is this idea of spec verification, making sure that when we sign that contract as complete, that we actually deliver to the specification. And I'm talking about all the specifications. Mr. Ray, where's Mr. Ray? John Ray, is he in here? So all the product support stuff that we care about, we verify all those things. All the TOs, every step in the TOs, we have maintainers step through them to make sure, we did those six steps, and sure enough, we just changed a tire. Perfect. Okay, let's move on. Next one we do is, number four is asset accountability, and that is we have to make sure that all the, taxpayer-owned, I'm going to say Air Force-owned, but really it's taxpayer-owned, assets are safe and secure and used according to the way they're supposed to be used. Like, so we have these things, we have somebody called the government flight representative to make sure that the flight ops are conducted properly, so that we can limit industry's liability if they didn't follow the process, guess who's liable? Guess who's liable? We have things like, DCMA processes for flight operations and ground operations. So that's another one that we are not able to flex on. That's the fourth one. The fifth one is certifications. Now, by the way, on Air Force One, people often think about airworthiness certification, right? So you're like, what's the big deal certification? That's one certification. John, 24 or 26, I don't remember, separate unique certifications for Air Force One. And so there's a lot of work there that has to be done in terms of certification. I'm not saying we can't do certification differently, but those certifications are going to have to get done. Certainly airworthiness, everyone would agree. We can talk a different discussion about, is there a different way of doing that airworthiness certification? But there's no doubt that airworthiness certification has to be done. The next one is options preservation. And this is the one that probably industry doesn't like as much. And this is about the government making sure that we get enough data rights that we can maintain a system. You know, omit data, and sometimes more than omit data. So that part, and that one proved very large on Air Force One, because at first, you know, well, do you want all the data? Because we actually produced a lot of this aircraft on our own. No. So, you know, honestly, I think we talked around each other for probably a month and a half on just that issue before we finally just closed the room, closed the door, and said, you know what, here's all we're wanting. And Boeing said, oh. I mean, seriously, that's the way this meeting went. Oh, okay, well, we can do that. Oh my gosh, if we'd have just started there, we'd have saved a lot of time and heartache. And so, options preservation. The last one is fuzzy, and I don't entirely like it myself. Number seven is fuzzy, and it's just due diligence, right? There's a certain amount of due diligence that we have to do sometimes. The reason I don't like it is, don't use that due diligence one as a catch-all excuse to shove everything that you want in there, okay? And this requires leadership attention. And so Mr. Sly and I, we did this personally. I know this sounds crazy, a two-star general doing this, but we had procedural murder boards where the government folks would have to walk through and explain to us and justify every one of those 220 cedrals. Every single one, and it took a long time. Thankfully, I am a detail-oriented guy, and with coffee, I can pretty much keep going. And so we went through that. And so all those seven responsibilities were central, because it goes back to unity of purpose. We want Boeing to be successful. If Boeing is not successful, we are not successful. If that contract terms and conditions, all the ground rules and assumptions and the terms and conditions that make up that contract aren't acceptable to Boeing, they're not going to sign the contract. Mr. Muhlenberg from Boeing and the president are expecting us to close the deal, right? They did the hard part. They set the requirements, and they agreed on the price, and they agreed on the contract type. It was not acceptable to us that we somehow suddenly, I worked with Jerry Kasman, and I couldn't figure out how to get this done. That's not an acceptable answer. And so that's why we did these seven. We said, we got to write this down. What do we actually care about? So I'm not saying those are the right seven. I'm not saying that they're not, they couldn't be adjusted. They're probably specific to this situation. They're probably not, as I think about it. Maybe the details of each of the seven would be tailorable for the program that you're working, but I still think those things are good things. And so let's see. 220 cedrals. Guess how many we ended with? 95. Over half. That's a lot of reduction. But that's not all. The next thing John and I did is we said, okay, 95, we're down to 95. Do we have to approve all of them? And so we went through and did it again with the remaining 95 to see which one of these are government approval, which ones need to be government approval, which ones do we just need to approve the first submittal of them? And then after that, they're just delivered. And so we went through that drill. And so we did a lot of stuff there. I talked about the data rights, 182 different ground rules and assumptions that we went through and looked. We went through all the verification methods. There's a section of the specification called Section 4. And that's when we walk through and we say, okay, does that need to be flight test? Does that need to be ground test? Does that need to be analysis? Does it need to be inspection? We went through all those and we scrubbed them.
That's Lieutenant General Duke Richardson, Military Deputy for the Office of the Assistant Secretary of the Air Force for Acquisition, Technology, and Logistics, speaking at a recent industry day for the Air Force Material Command. Hear the rest of his speech after one more break. I'm Eric White.
Artificial intelligence is often portrayed as a magic wand that will solve everything. But in reality, unlocking the power of AI comes from looking beyond the hype and focusing on thoughtful and realistic problem solving. At Leidos, we're focused on helping our customers adopt AI and machine learning tools with solutions that solve real problems. With a deep understanding of our customers, we're creating reliable, resilient, and secure solutions that look beyond the hype. Learn more at Leidos.com/AI.
We now continue listening to Lieutenant General Duke Richardson speaking at the Air Force Material Command Lifecycle Industry Days.
Folks, the point is the following. We act like our programs, we have this infinite bag of money out there, and we've got to start treating programs differently, whether they're fixed price or cost plus. So if you're running a cost-plus contract, and I'm talking to both industry and government right now, if you're running a fixed-price contract, government, think about it being, what if it was cost-plus? Would you make the same decisions? Would you make the same demands? Industry, if you're on a cost-plus contract, treat it like it's fixed price. Treat it like it's fixed price. You gotta think about that. I know it's making your head hurt right now, right? So what does that mean? That means if somebody calls from the government and wants something and it's not value added, it's okay to push back. I think those are game changers if we could just kind of remember that. This is not any of our money. It's not Air Force money. It's taxpayer money. And we've got to do our best to be great shepherds of it. And so I share that first example because really it's transformed a lot of my thoughts on acquisition. This is a very traditional program, but we couldn't force Boeing to sign that contract even though the price was agreed to. We had to get it to a position where the terms and conditions were satisfactory so that Boeing felt they could be successful, but also satisfactory so that we felt we could do our government responsibilities and I could stand in front of an audience like this and defend exactly what we did. And guess what? I can. We had a private session with the program office, and if you go to a program office, just like in industry, you'll have an expert on safety engineering. I mean, you will have basically an expert in all these different little stovepipes. And for them, their data deliverable is like the be all end all. Like if you don't get this, we're out. We're dead. This is not gonna work. We went through that as a team, John. Through a lot of agonizing detail. I think we wrote the statement of work about three times. We compromised where we could. If it didn't hurt us to compromise, we did it. If it hurt, we kind of assessed it a little bit closer. And if it was one of those seven government foundational things, I called my counterpart, Tim Peters, and said respectfully, Tim, I can't give on that one. That's here, and here's why. And then we moved on. And so it took, 5 months, John, I think, before we signed that contract. It took 5 months. So if you think this is easy day, you're wrong. If you think fixed price development, especially when the principle of principles gives you the price, you're absolutely flat out wrong. That's really when the hard part started. And so I'm very proud of the team, Mr. Sly, and their team is not here. I don't know if anybody from that organization, from Ryan, from your organization's here, but they really did a bang-up job. They just really, really did a phenomenal job. We pulled them together right after we signed the contract, and now they may have just been paying me lip service, I don't know. And I said, okay, guys, we gave where we could, we didn't give where we couldn't. Here we are, what do you think? Are we okay? And they all said yes. And so I'm looking for this contract. We're going to watch this one execute and see if it's a model in terms of, trying to hit that just right level of government oversight. And so that's my first example. It also gave me a chance to share the foundational government responsibilities that Mr. Sly and the team and I worked together to build. So that's a big one. We said yes when we could. No to low cost, no to low risk. And as long as it didn't violate those seven things, we said yes when we could. Because we had to get a deal. And I'm really, really proud of the deal that we got.
That was Lieutenant General Duke Richardson. He's military deputy for the Office of the Assistant Secretary of the Air Force for Acquisition, Technology, and Logistics. He was speaking at the Air Force Material Command's Life Cycle Industry Days last June. If you missed any of this episode, you can find it online. Go to federalnewsnetwork.com/agencyinfocus. I'm Eric White.
Thank you for listening to the Air Force Agency in Focus, sponsored by Leidos on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network.